1 week of 2008 under our belts. Seems to be a good time to look back in 2007 one more time, kind of like the rearview mirror. We had this discussion a little bit, it was last week, with Terry Mattingly of Scriptshower's Nude Service about the top news stories of 2007, and he said it really had to do with that whole evangelical, in the old days they might have called it a malaise, but indecision about what to do as a voting bloc. We're seeing it played out right now in New Hampshire as the two big evangelical contenders for the Republican Party, Mitt Romney and Mike Huckabee, battle it out. John McCain is in there, and I was wondering, why wasn't John McCain the favorite of the evangelical voters? Is that the top news story for 2007 and perhaps 2008 in your mind? We're going to listen to a roundtable of religion journalists from PBS Religion, Ethics, and News Weekly discuss both 2007 top religion news stories and what they think will be the top religion news stories in 2008 here in the first hour of Issues Etc. As time permits during this hour of audio open lines, we'll also ask you a simple question. You know, there's a new website out of Australia, topverse.com, something along those lines. It has somehow, through the magic of the internet, been able to survey 37 million Bible references on the internet of all different kinds and determine which were the top references on the internet of Bible passages. I'll let you take a guess which they found to be number one. We'll go through the top 10, and I'd like to know from you a little bit later, if you had to pick one or a list of some, what would be your favorite Bible passages? It's a simple question, no real wrong answers there. As time permits, we'll also talk about the death penalty case that is before the Supreme Court during audio open lines. Doug LeBlanc will join us in the latter part of the second hour to talk about a new men's movement. Maybe it's not new at all. Maybe it's just the rehash of an old men's movement. It's called the Mankind Project, and we'll talk with him. He's written about that in the latest edition of the Christian Research Journal. At 5 o'clock, David Gittrich joins us. He's State Development Director for Kansas for Life. You might have heard about this on the news. A grand jury has been convened in Kansas over whether or not Dr. George Tiller's abortion clinic is breaking state law. The grand jury was convened not by a prosecutor, but by a citizen's petition. We'll find out what the case is all about as we talk with David Gittrich of Kansas for Life. And then in the last half hour of Issues Etc. today, Pastor Stephen Parks joins us. Our ongoing conversation responding to evangelical proof texts, Matthew 15:9. Jesus there talks about the commandments of men, replacing and teaching as doctrines the commandments of men. Was he talking about creeds? Was he talking about catechisms? What was he talking about? We'll answer that question in the last half hour of the program. Our call-in number's live this Tuesday, the 8th of January, 1-800-730-2727, 505-7850, and our in-studio email address, issuesetc@kfuo.org. Some years have big news stories when it comes to religion. Jeff, am I wrong? We live and die on this kind of stuff during this program. Ever in your life have you seen so many stories in the mainstream media pertaining directly or indirectly to religion and Christianity? I don't think I've ever seen more in all my years of doing this.
I would agree. I think it's this nexus between Christians and the political realm.
So do you think it has to do with the fact that we're in a presidential election cycle, that religion has kind of risen to the top, and I can go every single day and be assured, I don't even get worried about it anymore, be assured of finding some religious story, religious angle out there to talk about on the program?
I think it's that, and then the onslaught of the new atheists, the books that have been very popular out there by Sam Harris and Dawkins and Christopher Hitchens and others who are looking, you know, a boogeyman of the, you know, the religious people out there in the public square.
So what, are we in like a feast and we're waiting for the famine that maybe next year or after the presidential elections, you and I won't be able to find anything to talk about in the mainstream press pertaining to religion whatsoever,
it
except for life
wins.
Issues and homosexuality?
Depends who wins. I mean, there's a big story after the election is going to be if a pro-life candidate wins, how powerful the evangelicals are, and they swung the states of Ohio.
Oh, yeah.
And
or
if they lose, like the midterm elections, it
was
the evangelicals. All along, as both Terry Mattingly of Scripps Howard told us last week, and John Green, the Pew Forum, the Roman Catholic voters are the key swing voters.
Oh, yeah. And I haven't seen, and I read pretty carefully, and I think pretty thoroughly, I have not seen any mainstream treatment of Roman Catholic voters, apart from those two that you mentioned, Terry Mattingly and John Green of the Pew Forum. By the way, you mentioned that top, those popular atheist books. That's number two on Christianity Today's list of top 10 religion stories for 2007. Number one, Taliban taking Korean short-term missionary team hostage and killing two. Number two, atheism tops the bestseller charts, according to Christianity Today. Now, that's different from the list that I found with the Religion News Writers Association. They don't have, let's see, I don't even know if they have either of those listed in their top 10 at all. No, they do not. So people of goodwill can differ. Well, here's what the Religion Writers Association lists as their top five. And then we're going to listen to this PBS Religion and Ethics News Weekly look back on 2007. Number one, evangelical voters ponder whether they will be able to support the eventual Republican candidate. That's their number one religion story for 2007. Number two, according to the Religion Writers Association, leading Democratic presidential candidates make conscious efforts to woo faith-based voters. Those are kind of two sides of the same coin, aren't they? Number three, according to the Religion Writers Association, the role of gays and lesbians in the clergy becomes or continues to be a dividing issue, especially with the Episcopal Church USA. Number four, global warming rises in importance among religious groups. And number five, according to the Religion Writers Association, top religion news stories in 2007, the question about what to do with illegal immigration becomes a religious debate in the United States. Now, are any of these your top religion stories for 2007? 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727, issues ETC at KFUO.org. We're coming to you this Tuesday, the 8th of January. Now, according to Christianity Today, Christianity Today simply asked its editors, what do you think were the top stories? The Religion News Writers Association actually polled its members, which is a journalist all over the country and the world, in fact. According to Christianity Today, here are their top religion stories for 2007. I mentioned the first two a moment ago. Taliban takes Korean short-term mission team hostage and kills two. Number two, atheism tops bestseller charts. Number three, presidential campaigns start early with some faith surprises. That's what they say. And then number four, Ruth Graham promoted to glory. That's how they put it. Ruth Graham, of course, passed away late in the year, wife of Billy Graham. And then number five, according to Christianity Today, Anglican communion fractures over scripture and homosexuality. Now, I'll be honest with you, folks. If I were picking the top five, I think the Anglican communion Episcopal Church USA story would have been near the top. I don't know if I would put it at number one. Now, do any of those resonate with you as what you would consider the top religion story for 2007? Is there something there that should be higher up or something there that's missing entirely? 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727, issues ETC at KFUO.org. Well, let's take this opportunity to look back along with the panel from PBS Religion and Ethics News Weekly at what they think were the most important religion stories of 2007.
We look back today at what we think were the top religion stories of 2007. John Allen is the Vatican correspondent for National Catholic Reporter. Kim Lawton is a correspondent and the managing editor of Religion and Ethics News Weekly. And Kevin Ekstrom is the editor of Religion News Service. Welcome to you all. Kevin, let's start with what's going on the religious right. Is there a name for it? What do you call it?
I would call it a realignment more than anything. And I think what's significant about 2007 is there was no one big thing that happened, but there were a bunch of smaller things. When you put them all together, sort of points to the idea that there's change in the air. You had a generation shift in leadership. Jerry Falwell died. James Kennedy died in Florida. You have decisions by, like, the Christian Coalition to decide to sit out the presidential race. They've never done that before. The new head of the National Association of Evangelicals has said he'd rather conduct a funeral or a wedding rather than meet with a candidate. And you have this whole sort of new range of issues that people are interested in, issues like the environment, global warming, and poverty, that have not been the traditional vanguard issues of the religious right in the past. And so if you put all that together and kind of connect the dots, you see that there's not the cohesion among the religious right that we've seen in recent years, and that is evidenced by their inability to sort of get behind and coalesce behind a single candidate.
Possibly Huckabee?
Possibly Mike Huckabee, and he may be the candidate that everyone has been waiting for and no one thought he had a chance. Whether that translates into electability in November is a completely different question that bears watching.
And Kim, you have a new blog on our website, One Nation, and you've been covering this race. What's going on? Have the evangelicals really found their candidate?
Well, you know, part of the reason why we started the blog was there's so much happening, we needed a way to keep up with it all. And I do think that there is some realigning maybe going on, but the religious right is not dead, and certainly there is still a very large, very important group of conservative voters that will be active in this election, and they're already sort of making their clout known. But you've got a Mormon running for president, Mitt Romney, having to explain whether or not he's really a Christian. You've got a pro-choice, divorced Roman Catholic Republican, Rudy Giuliani, running. You've got Democrats, Hillary Clinton and Barack Obama, reaching out to religious communities, not just black churches, but reaching out to evangelicals. So there's a lot of God talk, there's a lot of religion going on, and certainly Mike Huckabee, the former Southern Baptist minister, is another example of that.
John, welcome back from Rome.
Thanks, Bob.
You were here also when the U.S. Catholic bishops were debating how to word their guidelines this year as people think about how to vote. And it raises the question of the moral authority of the bishops. After the sex abuse scandal, to what extent do people really pay attention to what the bishops say?
Well, there's no question the scandal has hurt them. And this year saw a new wave, in a way, of the sex abuse litigation, a $660 million settlement in Los Angeles, bringing the total payout now to more than $2 billion. Mm. It's been an enormous blow, and not just in the court of public opinion, obviously, but also in terms of the internal life of the church. But at the same time, I mean, being a bishop is still a big bully pulpit. You know, there are some 230 active Catholic bishops in the United States, and when they can get together and launch a message, as we saw in 2007 with their engagement on the immigration issue, it can still cut some teeth. Mm-hmm. Now, with this document the bishops adopted this year, their so-called Faithful Citizenship Voter's Guide, I think they're trying to do two things. One is to inject themselves into the politics of 08 and trying to put the issues they care about, including immigration, but also, of course, the pro-life issues, abortion, euthanasia, heterosexual marriage, and all of that, trying to put that in the agenda. But they're also trying to do something else, which is get their own house in order by bringing the peace and justice constituency of the Catholic Church and the pro-life constituency, which have been badly splintered in the recent past, and we saw that clearly in 04, trying to put them back onto the same page.
All right, this is a little bit. We'll get some more of a PBS Religion and Ethics News Weekly Roundtable on the top religion stories of 2007. We're just looking back as we've got a week of 2008 under our belt. Do you agree or disagree? I noticed that story about the largest payout so far of any priestly abuse sexual scandal-related lawsuit, it was $660 million paid out by the L.A. Diocese, which is one-third of the total paid out to date, which is $2.1 billion. That one actually made it to the list of top religion news stories, at least according to the news writers, the Religion News Writers Association, but it was 10 out of 10. Of course, that would have been number one. I think it was number one back in 2003. I want to hear from you. What do you consider to be the top? You don't have to do the top 10. I don't ask you to do that, or even the top five. Give us your top two or three, your top or your very biggest religion news story for 2007. And while you're at it, you don't have to do this necessarily, but while you're at it, think about what you think would be the top religion story in 2008. We'll hear a little bit from PBS Religion and Ethics News Weekly on that later during Audio Open Lines, 505-7850. 1-800-730-2727 or issuesetc@kfuo.org. Some very interesting comments there from John Allen. He's a Vatican correspondent for the National Catholic Reporter. No small publication, that. It's talking about how the bishops in the United States are trying to realign the Catholic voters. Now, we mentioned this. Jeff mentioned it before we went into our audio. He said the Catholic voters still remain the real swing religious voters in the United States. By sheer numbers, they remain the most important religious voting bloc, although no one is talking about it because they don't generally get all the headlines. And it is interesting that among the many Catholics who have put their names into the hat for president in 2008, the one that gets the most press is the, what did he call him? Pro-choice, divorced,
Roman Catholic Republican.
Roman Catholic Republican. Rudolph Giuliani, of course. That's a pretty honest assessment of where he stands there.
By the way, I think we looked up this last year. There aren't more Roman Catholics than there are Protestants in the United States. We looked into that because we talked to somebody at Time, and you asked her that question, and she said there aren't more numerically Roman Catholics than there are people who consider themselves, you know, non-Roman Catholics or Protestants in the United States. And I thought I looked into that, but I should probably do it again.
Well, no, go ahead and look
worldwide,
it up.
Worldwide it is.
Oh, there's no doubt about it. I mean, Protestantism is actually relatively small compared to Roman Catholicism. Roman Catholicism makes up just a little over half of all the Christians on the globe. But it's not a small factor here, and especially in presidential politics. John Green, if he is to be believed of the Pew Forum, says, look, this is the story that no one's writing. Is the story about the direction of the Roman Catholic voter in 2008. 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727, issuesetc@kfuo.org. Stephen St. Louis has emailed us with, he's got a list of three, I assume in this order. He says increasing violence by Muslims against Muslims as well as against non-Muslims. Number two for Stephen St. Louis, continued splintering of the Episcopal Church USA with many going to new bishops in developing countries. That actually made both lists, according to the News Writers Association. That one came in at number three. And according to Christianity Today, that one came in at number five. And then Steve has as his third pick for top news story of 2007, Bill Hybels' confession that his church has failed to instruct their members in the faith and how he downplayed it. Well, that certainly was a story probably of greater import for American evangelicalism than many did realize. It didn't make any of the lists, according to either Christianity Today or the Religion News Writers Association. Steve, thank you very much for the email. That in-studio email address is issuesetc@kfuo.org. Back to PBS Religion and Ethics News Weekly.
Yeah. That's interesting. And taking you back to Rome now and to the Pope, I'm thinking about the relationship between Christians and Muslims. 138, perhaps more, Muslim leaders sent a letter to the Pope saying, let's talk, let's have a dialogue. How is that coming out?
Well, I think this is one of the really unappreciated stories of 07. You know, Bob, since 9/11, we've been asking the question, where are the centrist Muslims with whom we can have a dialogue? And it's been difficult because, of course, the Muslim world doesn't have a Vatican. There's no central administrative structure, a door you can go to knock on. We've been waiting, in a way, for them to get organized so that conversation can take place. And really what we saw in 07 is the first outlines of such an ad hoc structure taking shape in the form of this letter from 138 Muslim scholars and jurists and leaders representing all of the major and even many of the minor branches of the Islamic world, addressed not just to the Pope, but also to 25 other Christian leaders, including the Patriarch of Constantinople and the Archbishop of Canterbury, saying that we can find common theological ground around the issues of love of God and love of neighbor, and let's have a conversation. I think that's an extraordinarily important development. The Pope has now invited Prince Ghazi in Jordan to organize a meeting with some of these scholars with the Pope in Rome to try to carry the conversation further. That's going to be a very interesting story to watch.
A lot of Protestant leaders were quick to respond very enthusiastically to that proposal from the Muslims, too. Will they be any part of that meeting in Rome?
Well, it'll be interesting. The Vatican has just begun to try to put some flesh on this conversation. I think in many ways the ball is going to be in the court of Prince Ghazi in Jordan as the organizing authority, so to speak, to try to figure out how to make this happen. One of the wrinkles here is that the Vatican has been waiting for a number of years to try to open a theological conversation with the Islamic world. Now that the Islamic world seems prepared to do that, the Vatican is beginning to have some second thoughts about whether talking theology is really the best way to begin, or whether we really ought to be talking about diplomatic and political questions, above all the question of religious freedom for Christian minorities in the Islamic world, which is not in an altogether encouraging story these days. Yeah.
Certainly is. I mean, you look at the report that the State Department puts out every year, and they put out this report on human rights and in particular religious liberties. They have a section there. And the plight of Christians in Muslim-dominated countries usually will land you on, they got a name for these countries now, and I can't remember what they are. There's a certain little acronym that they use. It'll land you on the State Department's list, a Muslim country that treats Christians poorly, and there's no shortage of those. Of course, this is the real problem. The Vatican reaches out to Islam, such as it is, and says, let's have a conversation. Islam, at least in the form of these scholars, we don't know how representative they are really of Islam in general, say, okay, let's have a conversation. It's not just the obstacle of where are we going to meet, who's going to be there, who's going to be invited, but what are you going to talk about? And will, for instance, the Pope or his representative be deemed a suitable representative of all of Christendom? Or will this just be a Vatican Islam conversation? And then what do you do with radical Islam that won't be at this meeting, more likely than not? 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727, issues ETC at KFUO.org. It would be interesting to see in 2008 if they can actually put together not only a meeting there of Islam and the Vatican and whatever other Christian leaders may be invited, but the Pope's also going to visit the United States. When I talked to Terry Mattingly last week, he said, well, you know, it's never a small deal when the Pope comes to the United States, but he doesn't expect Pope Benedict XVI to do anything really newsworthy while he's here in the Americas. Nothing's on his agenda that would make it a big, big, exciting story. We'll hear more from PBS Religion and Ethics News Weekly on the top news stories of 2007, and I want to hear from you as well. Steve says he thinks Muslim violence ought to be the number one story from 2007, increased Muslim violence. If it comes to religion stories, what do you think? I'm Todd Wilkin. This is Issues Etc. Live this Tuesday, January the 8th. Cast your vote for the top religion news story of 2007 during this break. 1-800-730-2727, 505-7850, or Issues ETC at KFUO.org. Concordia University St. Louis Center underwrites Issues Etc., and it's your opportunity to, through their classes that meet just one night a week at 44 and 270, continue your associate's, bachelor's, or MBA. Find out more about what they're doing under the What's New section of our website, issuesetc.org, or give Concordia University St. Louis Center a call, 314-984-8840, 314-984-8840. Concordia University St. Louis Center, professional education with a personal touch. More audio open lines after this.
Talk radio for the thinking Christian. Listening to Issues Etc.
Issues Etc. is underwritten in part locally by Christ Our Savior Lutheran Church in Freeburg, Illinois. Christ Our Savior is located at 612 North State Street in Freeburg. The Reverend Bruce Kaseman is the pastor. Their phone number, 618-539-5664, 618-539-5664. Christ-centered, cross-focused, Christ Our Savior Lutheran Church in Freeburg, an Issues Etc. underwriter on AM 850 KFUO.
At Worldwide KFUO, you can listen to archive programs, but did you know you can listen to our live broadcast? Just go to www.kfuo.org and click the Listen Live button. You can also find out what's playing now by clicking the Program Guide button on the left. So click the Program Guide, find out what's on, Click the live button and tune in to KFUO Live on Worldwide KFUO at KFUO.org.
General Electric and the population crisis in India.
This is a special commentary from the Susan B. Anthony List, named for the suffragette who was proudly pro-life.
How did the CEO respond when GE Healthcare South Asia was accused of facilitating sex-selective abortions in India? In recent years, GE popularized low-cost mobile ultrasound machines being used by pregnant women and their doctors all over India. This has coincided with an increase in sex-selective abortions in that country. Though arguing that GE is not a regulatory agency and could not be held responsible for such activity, the CEO did say the company would assist in awareness programs to reduce the practice of aborting baby girls based on their sex.
This is Marjorie Dannenfelser, president of the Susan B. Anthony List, inviting you to join us in our battle for life. For more, go online to sba-list.org.
This presentation of the Meyer Minute on AM 850 KFUO is underwritten by Thrivent Financial, where values thrive, and online at thrivent.com.
Welcome to the Meyer Minute. Hi, Christian here. Love. I will do anything to get love. I was at daycare. I was up on the table. Carmen was changing my diaper. I was not embarrassed, but I got jealous. Mommy came to get me. Mommy loves wonderful me. Who wouldn't? While I was up on the table, Jackson walked up to Mommy. Jackson hugged Mommy, my Mommy. I saw it happen. Jackson muzzling in on my love. Carmen, finish this diaper job. I've got to get down there. I've got to pry that twerp away from my Mommy. I showed him. Carmen put me down. I toddled over. I pushed Jackson away. See? I will do anything to get love. You big people, isn't that how love works? Get all you can. Don't share love. If you share love, you will have less love for wonderful you. Opa says, Christian, Christian, with your name, you must learn that love is for giving more than getting. When Christians give love, love isn't less, love grows. Opa says, Christian, what if you got a brother? Would Mommy and Daddy's love be divided, or would it multiply? I don't know what you're talking about, Opa, but Mommy is getting big.
This presentation of the Meyer Minute on AM 850 KFUO is underwritten by Thrivent Financial, online at thrivent.com. We do more than work. We work with a purpose.
Tomorrow on Issues Etc., the New Hampshire primaries. What else will we be talking about after the New Hampshire primary? Dr. Jeff Walls will be our guest. Also, Dr. David Adams will join us to talk about a story that we'll preview a little bit, a little later in Audio Open Lines if time permits, and that's the Supreme Court case currently being considered on the use of lethal injection for capital punishment. Now, I had said on the air about that story before that it could really undo... capital punishment nationwide, since that's the predominant method of execution where it's carried out. And I think I was completely wrong, because what the actual proposal before the Supreme Court is, look, this is cruel and unusual punishment, but if we just give them one drug, kills them, boom, that wouldn't be cruel and unusual punishment. The lawyers for the plaintiff side, if you will, are actually proposing just a different drug regime. So I think I completely misread that story on the U.S. Supreme Court's decision on the death penalty. You live, you learn. What's the top news story as far as 2007 is concerned for you? Steve emailed us and said, it's got to be Muslim violence. Splintering of the Episcopal Church USA. Well, according to the News Writers Association, the Religion News Writers Association, it's you, the evangelical voter, not being able to make up your mind. And according to Christianity Today, it's that story from earlier in the year when the Taliban took Korean Christian missionaries hostage for a while and killed a couple of them. What would you say is the top religion stories? Just think over the year. Think back over what you read, what you heard, what you saw on television, or what you heard on this program, and give us a call. 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727, or issuesetc@kfuo.org. They're considering that very question, top religion stories of 2007, in a panel on PBS Religion and Ethics News Weekly.
Kim, you spent a lot of time with Episcopal bishops this year. What's the state there? What's the state of play in the split in the Episcopal Church?
Well, it was a big year for that controversy, not just within the Episcopal Church, but within the broader worldwide Anglican Communion. The year started with the top leaders of the Anglican Communion really putting the U.S. Church on notice, giving what some called an ultimatum, saying, we need to hear what you're going to do about gay bishops, same-sex blessings. The end of September, the U.S. bishops, Episcopal bishops, said we're going to exercise restraint in consecrating any more gay bishops, and we're not going to, as a body, authorize same-sex blessings, but they left the door open for those blessings to happen at the local level. That wasn't enough for some of the real conservatives, and indeed, over the past year, many have started to leave the denomination. Some are actually aligning with churches in Africa, and you saw Americans being consecrated as bishops of the Anglican Church of Nigeria, the Anglican Church of Kenya. So you've got these realignments again taking place here, and it's putting a lot of pressure on the worldwide church.
Yeah, and Kevin, a lot of the other American Protestant denominations are watching what's going on with the Episcopalians.
Right, and I think that's the big part of the story that sometimes gets lost, is it's not just... It doesn't matter just what happens to Episcopalians, but you've got other groups, the Lutherans, the Methodists, the Presbyterians, all the sort of the old mainline churches who are watching this very carefully to find out how this plays out. And, you know, we see in California where the first diocese has voted to basically secede from the Episcopal Church. Everyone's watching that to see how much does it cost, how long does it take in the courts, you know.
Who gets the property?
Yeah, how ugly is it? And, you know, depending on how that comes out, that may really impact how other churches choose to deal with this issue.
Yeah. You were talking about the relations, Kim, between an American church and churches in the Third World. And, John, that's part of a huge shift that's going on in Christianity, right?
Oh, I think this is one of the mega trends in global Christianity today, which is the eruption of the global South, Africa, Asia, Latin America, but perhaps especially Africa, as a protagonist in the global Christian scene, which it really has not been since the 4th century, since the era of Augustine. Christianity in sub-Saharan Africa in the 20th century went from roughly 8 million in 1900 to about 140 million or more in the Catholic Church and about 360 million in terms of the total Christian population. I mean, that's a growth rate of almost 7,000%. You know, it's absolutely phenomenal. And with those kinds of numbers and that kind of energy, Africa is making itself felt. And in that sense, I think what's happening, the crisis in the Anglican Communion, is really a kind of canary in the coal mine for a much deeper phenomenon going on in Christianity, which is this eruption of the developing world.
Mm-hmm. And it's interesting watching some of the white Western world deal with this and deal with these African leaders who say, hey, we need to be taken seriously here.
You know, it's not a regional thing. And on listening to their description of the story, it's the nexus of two big stories. He's absolutely right. The megatrend in Christianity of a 7,000% growth of Christianity in sub-Saharan Africa in just over 100 years. That's a big story in and of itself. It's a megatrend. It's a story that, you know, doesn't fit into 1 year, of course, or even into a century. And then you couple that with little stories like the Episcopal Church USA deciding that it's just going to chart its own course with regard to worldwide Anglicanism, and with those growing churches in the global South. It's really a theological issue. You could talk about it as a regional thing. You could talk about growth in sub-Saharan Africa. But what it really is, and not that all the theology is absolutely correct here, but a more conservative and biblical Christianity is exploding in the southern hemisphere of our planet. And the compromised and more, I don't even want to say the word Western because Western doesn't cover it. The compromised liberal churches, predominantly in Western Europe and America, are just shrinking. The Episcopal Church USA, a case in point, over 30% smaller today than it was 30 years ago. It's about 2.7 million people, I think, now in the Episcopal Church USA. 30 years ago, there was one-third more. Well, you can track their shrinkage along with their trend toward liberal Christianity, toward compromise with the culture. One might argue it's just a recipe for not growth, but atrophy. I think there is a theological, the equator isn't just a line on the map, it's also a boundary between two different Christian theologies that are vying for one another, and one is growing and the other one is shrinking. And then when you have African bishops who will cross the line and say, you few Christians in the Western world who still want to hold fast to the Bible, who still want to keep the central teachings of Christianity central, hold fast to the creeds and the confessions of the church, guess what? We're here for you. Can you blame Episcopalian congregations or whole dioceses for saying, you know, I think we'd like our bishop to be this guy from Nigeria instead of you, bozo bishop, who's been compromising on every biblical issue for the last 30 years and destroying our church? You can't blame them.
I wonder if Gene Robinson has endorsed any of the candidates while they're in New Hampshire.
I hadn't even thought about that. Gene Robinson, of course, is the first openly gay bishop in the Episcopal Church USA of no place else but New Hampshire. I wonder who he's campaigning for, if he's campaigning for anybody.
And you said last year that Pat Robertson will always just save a slot for Pat Robertson, but he didn't make a slot. Last year he recommended assassinating Hugo Chavez of Venezuela.
I don't know. You know, his endorsement of Rudolph Giuliani, if you took some of these other stories out of the picture, he might have made the top 10. His endorsement of Rudolph Giuliani, a pro-life evangelical leader such as he is, endorsing enthusiastically an openly pro-choice Republican candidate for president. That's a pretty big story. Of course, it's all relative. It gets paled by comparison to the other big stories out there. So where do you think all of this fits in your list of top 2007 stories of a religious nature? 505-7850. I want to hear from you. What's your top religion story for 2007? What do you think it'll be for 2008? 1-800-730-2727 or issuesetc@kfuo.org. Let's see. The Religion News Writers Association put the realignment, they call it a realignment of the Episcopal Church USA with Anglican bishops in Africa, as number 7 on their list. And Christianity Today, the editors there, put the same story as number 5. Oh, by the way, Jeff pointed this out to me. They put a story, Christianity Today put a story that I never expected to make it. I thought it was a very interesting story, not only because of the person involved, but because he's a regular guest on the program. In fact, he was guest on our program Sunday night. Frank Beckwith returns to Catholicism. That was number 8 in their top 10 religion stories for 2008, according to the editors of Christianity Today. Frank Beckwith goes back to Catholicism. That was a significant conversion. There are no two ways about it. I don't know if I like Frank, and I think it was a big story, but I don't know if I would have put it in the top 10. What about you? 1-800-730-2727, 505-7850, or issuesetc@kfuo.org. Other stories that made the list of both of these organizations: global warming becoming an issue among evangelicals, illegal immigration, the Buddhist monks leading a protest there in Burma, the deaths of some big names in American Christianity, Jerry Falwell, D. James Kennedy. In fact, I think it was Terry Mattingly last week who said, biggest story as Jerry Falwell's death was, Jerry Falwell was on the wane. He thought the bigger story was D. James Kennedy's death. What do you think? 1-800-730-2727, 505-7850, or issuesetc@kfuo.org.
Mm-hmm.
One of the great stories of the year for me was seeing all those Buddhist monks in Myanmar out in the streets protesting the government, indicating the crackdown was awful, but that they were there, mm-hmm. out in the streets, indicating what?
I think it does two things. One is it sort of shows that the government in Myanmar has lost its moral authority when you've got these sort of peace-loving Buddhist monks saying that there's something wrong here and we're going to protest by the hundreds, you know, out in the streets to show it. I think the other thing, and maybe this is more important, is that it really put a human face on a faraway place for a lot of people. I mean, a lot of Americans, I would imagine, would be hard-pressed to find Myanmar on a map. And when you see, you know, the footage of this and you see the monks out there mm-hmm. protesting, it sort of says there's something going on here and maybe we should pay a little bit more attention. So I think it really sort of put a human face on the problem.
Kim, here at home, there were some weeks there when the bestseller lists in the newspapers seemed to be pretty heavy with books by atheists. What's going on?
Well, this was a trend that actually began last year as well, but I think you've seen atheist writers have really found an audience in the U.S., and they're doing very well with it. We should note, though, that along with some of these bestsellers like Christopher Hitchens' Why God Is Not Great and some of the others, there were still a lot of religiously oriented books on the bestsellers list this year. Megachurch pastors T.D. Jakes and Joel Osteen certainly are up there. So it's not that the atheists have taken over, but certainly they found an audience.
Mm-hmm. But at the same time, John, that there seemed to be this anti-religious interest, there was going on a lot of interest in very traditional religious practice.
Yeah, that's been a fascinating thing to watch in 07 as well, is the kind of eruption of tradition and a kind of return to very traditional modes of devotion and spiritual practice, which tends to cut across denominational and religious boundaries. I mean, we see in the Jewish world, even in Reformed congregations, a greater use of Hebrew and a deeper appreciation mm-hmm. for traditional forms of prayer. In the Catholic world, obviously, the big-ticket symbol of all of this was Pope Benedict XVI's decision to widen permission for celebration of the old Latin Mass, the Latin Mass from before the Second Vatican Council, called the Tridentine Rite. And although there hasn't been a big mass market explosion of interest, there certainly are increasing numbers. And I think all of this says something about the nature of a postmodern world in which change happens so fast. We're all reinventing our lives every day in a way. Mm-hmm. But there is this hunger for connection to something that runs very deep.
Now, I would have probably put that, this was something that we noticed here on this program years ago, only because people like Colleen Carroll Campbell noticed it, a Roman Catholic writer, regular guest on this program, and a columnist now for the St. Louis Post-Dispatch. I think she's also got a television program on EWTN. She noticed and wrote this book called The New Faithful, that the young people in the Catholic Church desired not only the Catholic Church, but young people were desiring historic Christianity, often in the form of Roman Catholicism, this movement back toward historic Christianity, broadly defined, creedal Christianity, the Christianity of the classic Reformation or of the classic pre-Reformation or the Christianity of Eastern Orthodoxy or of the Church Fathers, young people trending back toward it. In fact, I was thinking about this just today, coincidentally. I was thinking about the emergent church, this kind of goofy, let's sit around and drink coffee and sit in puffy chairs and talk about Jesus endlessly and never come to any conclusions. One of the things that drives its popularity, in my opinion, is that it likes to borrow from historic Christianity out of context. It likes to grab stuff like incense and crucifixes and prayers and all these kinds of things out of context from historic Christianity and use it for its own purposes. But that's a draw for young people who say, wow, that looks like something that's been around longer than me. And it was going to happen inevitably that in a pop American Christianity across denominational lines that has decided that Christian history began when they came to Jesus or they walked the aisle or they gave their heart to Jesus, sooner or later there was going to be backlash with people who said, you know what, I think there were Christians before me. And I think there was such a thing as Christian church before Rick Warren wrote The Purpose-Driven Life or before Willow Creek was founded back in 1970, whatever. I think there was a Christianity before. In fact, I think there was a lot of Christianity before that. And they start learning their history, and then they start realizing that there is an historic Christianity. And they realize, after perhaps just being interested in it casually, that it actually has some substance to it. It just wasn't a style or a preference for 2,000 years. It was actually the shape of Christian piety all that while. And suddenly, kinds of in fits and starts, perhaps we're seeing this age of, let's reinvent the church, maybe, hopefully, coming to an end, and Christians realizing, maybe only the youngest ones realizing, we don't have to reinvent anything. It's been here all along. Jerry's calling from St. Louis. Hi, Jerry.
Yes, sir. To go along with what you just said about it being here all along, I'd like to suggest for the most important religious news story, the same story that has been since Genesis 3, that God promised to send us a Redeemer, and that this season of the year we've remembered that, commemorated that, appreciated that, and thank God for that.
Jerry, thank you so much. Well, you know, that's always the story for the church. We're talking here about how the world looks in at the Christian church, or the world looks in at other religions, and what it notes and what it sees of import. But you're absolutely right, Jerry. The story always is the story of the Redeemer. Isn't it sad that there are so few churches that would actually realize that? That the story they need to be telling, heralding, the news they need to be getting out and preaching and proclaiming and praying and practicing week in and week out is that same old story of Jesus Christ's perfect life, death, and resurrection for a sinful world. It's very easy to get distracted by all the other stories and to spend a lot of time preaching Sunday after Sunday about all the other stories or issues, when that's really the one, the only one that the church has to tell that the world can't tell. The world can't tell that story and doesn't consider it newsworthy. Yeah, they're interested in Jesus every Christmas, and he makes the cover of Time magazine, or every Lent he'll make the cover of Time magazine or Newsweek occasionally, mostly misrepresented. But it's not because there's a bias in the media. It's because there are so many Christians anxious out there to talk about Jesus only at Christmas and Easter. And since they spend so little time thinking, talking about Jesus, and so much time talking about themselves, the Christian rather than the Christ, when they're asked, who is this Jesus? They're like, well, okay, let me dust off my old theology book that I haven't opened since last Christmas, and maybe I'll be able to tell you something about him. Pastors get out of practice, you know. A pastor that doesn't preach Christ and him crucified every Sunday gets out of practice, and pretty soon he kind of forgets how to do it. Here's the last of PBS Religion, Ethics, and News Weekly's roundtable on 2007 and its top religion stories.
Our time is almost up. Let me ask you each very quickly. Was there something that happened in the year past that you think we kind of missed, we didn't give enough attention to, Kim?
Well, something we didn't even talk about here yet, the Iraq War, and some of the religious concerns, especially humanitarian concerns about refugees, persecution of minorities like Christians in Iraq, the sort of ethical questions about exiting, all of that didn't get, the religious part of that didn't get a lot of attention.
A case that got some attention but it's worth watching is the court decision in Baltimore against Fred Phelps and his protesters, the God Hates Fags people. There are really serious questions there about religious free speech in America that's worth watching.
John, very quickly.
The disappearance of the Christian population in the Middle East and what this means in terms of Christian-Muslim relations, and also what it means for the presence of Christianity in the place where it all began.
Thanks to Kevin Ekstrom of Religion News Service, Kim Lawton of this program, and John Allen of National Catholic Reporter. Next week, a look ahead at what to watch for in 2008.
Well, I agree with John Allen of National Catholic Reporter, a story that was missed by everybody. In fact, we barely talked about it here on Issues Etc., to our shame.
60 Minutes got it.
They sure did. The disappearance of the Christian population in the Middle East. That there are fewer Christians in the Middle East now than ever before. Now, it's a function of two things. One is the rise of global Islam, which is very intolerant to Christianity and other religions, for that matter. But the other is, and I don't think tell me if I'm wrong, the war in Iraq, one of the safe havens of Christians, although it wasn't always that safe, but one of the safe havens for Christians in the Middle East was Saddam Hussein's Iraq. It seems ironic, it seems counterintuitive, but he actually afforded some protections to Christian churches. And 60 Minutes did a program just a couple of weeks ago where they talked to an Anglican priest there, and he says, well, first of all, most of the Christians are gone, and the ones that are still here, they don't go to church on Sunday. They don't have churches anymore. Their churches have been taken over or destroyed. The disappearance of Christians in the Middle East. Now, if you just entertain the historic irony there for a moment, that Iraq, the birthplace of fathers of the faith like Abraham, the Middle East, the cradle of Christianity, with fewer and fewer Christians. Hey, you don't even have to talk about the region. Go to Jerusalem or Bethlehem. My pastor and a group of people just got back from the Holy Land late last year, and he said, you know, the Jews hate the Muslims and the Muslims hate the Jews, but they both hate us. And he says, you are a very unpopular person, if you open up your eyes and see, walking around in Jerusalem, if you're a Christian. And the few that stay in Bethlehem and the other birthplace, literal birthplace of Christianity, the few that stay there are not popular and not afforded much religious freedom if they stay. That's a pretty big story. When we come back, we do have more audio open lines. We'll look ahead at 2008. If you had a hard time coming up with a story for 2007, what you thought was the top news story, let's look ahead to 2008. It's going to be a busy, busy year. It's going to begin, or it has begun already, with pretty much politics dominating the news. But, of course, part of that story of politics is the place of the evangelical voter. Jeff already said it when we were talking earlier, said, look, if an American evangelical gets elected to the White House, or Mitt Romney for that matter, not an American evangelical, but acceptable enough to American evangelical voters, if they get elected to the White House, what will the big question be in 2008? This time in 2009, they'll be talking about the resurgence, the rise of the evangelical voter bloc, how they managed to keep an evangelical in the White House for four more years. And if they don't, then we'll be talking about the split up, the breakup, the disintegration of that voting bloc. When we come back, more audio open lines. We'll look ahead at 2008. 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727, or issuesetc@kfuo.org. Our Issues Etc. Book of the Month for January is a devotional resource. It's the kind of book that you can literally put into your pocket. That's the size it is. Put into your pocket and carry with you for your own personal devotion, but perhaps even more importantly than that, for your ability to share the Word of God with others, especially those who are in need. If you ever find yourself visiting one of your fellow parishioners in the hospital, someone who's sick temporarily or chronically, someone who's dying, I know you know somebody, this is the book for you. It's called Visitation. It's a great devotional resource. It's our Issues Etc. Book of the Month for January. Find out more at our website, issuesetc.org, issuesetc.org, or call Concordia Publishing House, 1-800-325-3040. We'll be right back.
Equipping the priesthood of all believers. You're listening to Issues Etc.